TLS is go for main engine start.
Go at throttle up. Negative return. Then we see a nominal Miko. Welcome to space.
Hello, sir. What's going on?
How are you? How's it going? How's it going, eh?
Oh, you're going to up your Canadian now that we're at war, me and you?
How are you now? Yeah.
I'm going to have $5,000 not to spend on you, Jake.
Oh, yeah. We're going to really miss that $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be brutal. Yeah.
I mean, I guess I could probably spend it on you in Mexico.
Hey, there you go.
He didn't say in on Canadians. He just said in Canada, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So
you could do the Reform Party UK trip trick where you just you give it through a proxy and then it's okay. Then it's totally fine to buy it.
Shell company. Yeah.
Yeah. See, there's solutions to every problem, I think. I mean,
Jake and I are going to solve this one. We're going to mend our nations back together, me and you.
We're going to try.
This is the platform for it.
this is where problems are solved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got quite a rundown today, man. We got 100 space stories to catch up on. We have a weird, somewhere between a theory and a fever dream scenario I want to sketch on the future of Jared Isaacman as I see it. And now I read every story about NASA in a way of, oh, this confirms my theory for several reasons. So it's infected my brain. I'd like to infect yours.
We've been like billing this, like we've been like, you know, like presaging this theory, and it's making it sound like it's like totally crackpot, but I actually don't think it's really that weird. So I'm really excited to see what the listeners think of it.
Honestly, depending on what day it is, I don't really believe it. So we'll see. We'll find out. I think I just want to prepare people. I want to prepare people for some options that are in front of us.
Yeah.
So
I'm gonna help them get through the change. Right?
Do Google News to see if any recent stories change my theory. I would like you to tell me about what you're drinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's that time. So a year ago and a year before that, I had the bottle of mead, which is my very first batch. You remember this one?
Oh my God.
This is the fire water one or whatever. So as you can see down here, the bottling date was August 2024. So my commitment was every year I'd open another one to see if it got better. Because it was not good when I bottled it, and it was not good a year later. But now we're 2 years later. So we're going to see if time has healed this wound.
Wow.
This is the very first batch I made. So it's been 2 years now. I've been making mead for 2 years now. That's pretty wild. Sorry.
So what's the newest batch that you made? Because
I'm opening. What's that?
What's the newest batch you've made?
I just bottled a mango habanero, which is really good, and a blueberry Earl Grey.
Wow. So what's your frequency? That's like quarterly, monthly? What are we doing?
Probably like every two months, maybe every 10 weeks or so. Yeah, roughly. So I kind of do them together sometimes. Like sometimes, like these two batches I did, I could just brew them in parallel. But then I might just like go a month where I don't do it. So I don't know, we'll see.
It's all vibes based. I like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just have a Tonewood Freshie. Another straight out of New Jersey Tonewood Freshie. That cute little tractor that people have been seeing lately. So. Yeah. My list of drinks will change frequently now that we're into football season. That looks nice.
It's got its good clarity.
Does it look better or worse than you remember?
It looks the same.
Okay. Well, that's not inspiring. Nope. Is it supposed to be better? Like, what did you expect to happen between then and now?
No, they age. Like, they're like wines. They're supposed to get better. So the if you have harsh, like the problem with this batch was that I stressed the yeast out. So it was like fermenting in just like not good conditions with like not enough nutrition. And so like they were they say they're stressed out. They're just like not doing very well. And so they let off all these like weird off flavors, or like they're like, it's like bad alcohols, you know, like the wrong chain of alcohol. It's like not where it's supposed to be. And so the taste kind of like rocket fuel is what the.
And you're still supposed to drink this, or should we not be drinking this?
I wouldn't drink a lot of it. No.
Great.
But it's supposed to. It's
That's
supposed
great
to
on a show where
time.
I have no guests to carry this if if something happens over there.
No, that's not doable. I'm going to put that one over there and go drinkless on the show, I think.
Amazing.
See, if you remember last year, I think it got better last year. Like a year in was better than the day it was bottled. But I think 2 years in, I don't know if it's better. It might be worse.
Turn the corner. Yeah. Is this the last bottle of that around?
No, there's two more. So
Man.
Yeah, I made four bottles. So
we're going to be talking about a presidential election the next time you're cracking, or the last time you're cracking one of those open.
That's crazy. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
well, you might need it then. I mean, hey, you might be toasting to one of my theories here. So we'll see what happens.
Maybe, yeah. Is that where you want to start, or do you want to end with that?
No. Well, we could if you want. I don't know. No, I want to hear about your Mars thing. You told me you were mad about this Mars story, and I don't feel I don't know if I can get that exercise about this. So I would like to crack it into you, Jake. The Mars Telecommunications Network, Blue Origin, has won $700 million straight from Congress, straight through lobbying, public pressure campaigns, whatever you might call it. Give me the Jake.
Is there a source selection document for this yet? There isn't, right?
I do not think so. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not mad that they won it. I'm confused about how SpaceX didn't win it, because it feels like there's no way to adjudicate bids against SpaceX's in a way that they would not win. You know, like I feel like
they weren't even really pushing for it, though, were they?
But that confuses me too. Like, so like either they didn't bid, in which case I'm like, why on earth wouldn't they bid? Or they did bid and they weren't selected by some strange, like I can't figure out where along the chain that breaks down. Because to me, if you're like, oh, what would be really great is if we had something like a communication network, you know, something kind of like Starlink that was like at like a, like Mars, you know, like by a company that might be interested in Mars, making like a product that's like communications, kind of like Starlink. Can you think of any companies that would be like really good at that and have like really good technology that's like proven and robust and cheap and like, you know, like, can you think of any ideas there, Anthony? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine an RFP that is better suited to that company. I don't know what happened. What's going on? I don't get it. Do you have any ideas? I don't know.
I didn't even think about SpaceX at all for this. Quantum Space also was in the bidding pool. So there you go. Great stock. Bye. I don't know. That's a great point, though. Like, did they bid is a really interesting question. I sensed that, I think maybe I was just very influenced by this public pressure campaign from Rocket Lab and Blue Origin. They were the only two. They were tweeting demo videos at each other. They were doing, you know, Twitter spats about it. They were, I mean, Rocket Lab sounds like they were lobbying via Ted Cruz. There's something going on there. I think I took that as like, these are the only two that are bidding at this price. Maybe SpaceX didn't, again, like we think it's not even worth launching for other people. Maybe this is like, it's not worth $700 million is nothing.
Yeah, but it's like by their admission, they were gonna do it anyway. So like, you know, you kind of like imagine a thing where it's like, well, we just get free $700 million to do the thing we were gonna do anyway.
But maybe they're not. Like, maybe this is the doubters are right, Jake.
I mean, maybe it is right, and that's the discussion. Maybe they're not actually interested in Mars.
We've complained about it. We've lit them up for, hey, you've never sent something to Mars. Like Hera. Yeah, I know. But like Mars, orbit Mars, SpaceX metal, thing that says made on Earth by humans, orbiting Mars. Exactly. That's what we're talking about.
I have one charitable interpretation, one possible theory, which is that SpaceX thought, I don't want to deal with any government requirements when I build my Mars network.
I'm going to do it anyway, so I'm just going to skip this. And then when I build it to my specifications, NASA's going to buy it anyway because there's no other option. And so, like, they're going to get that money anyway, but by their own terms, you know? Because, mm-hmm. like, that's also true. If they have it all set up already and they're like, hey, NASA, by the way, if you want to use some of these bits, here's the price.
Here's the rate.
NASA's going to be like, yes, please. Here we go. Like,
right. Here's the rate and here's the terms. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly, right? And this is the tech. We decided what the tech looked. That's the best thing I can come up with. But
I think that's the answer. And NASA will read the terms of service. But they're going to hit agree also at the end. It's like, they're going to scroll real fast, just like we all do.
Yeah, yeah.
sure. Agree.
They'll do that thing where they'll write an RFP that goes out and says, we would like to buy a thing that already exists. And then SpaceX will then just bid it and then they'll, you know.
Or not. I mean, a lot of these DOD things that are happening that Starlink is part of, it's kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, well, it already exists. So we'll rework this project, this program to make use of that. So, yeah, I mean, all right. I think we've answered the SpaceX thing. Give me Blue Origin Rocket Lab. Give me that breakdown. Like, if it was one of those two based on the Twitter videos they've been posting, what did you have a vibe on where it would go?
I didn't have a vibe on where it would go, but I think I would have preferred Rocket Lab to get this one. Not because I think the blue bid was bad, or like I think the blue ring thing is going to be as fine. Like that's cool. Like I like that spacecraft, so I go for it, you know. But they've got a lot, and I kind of wanted to see the pie spread around a little more, I think. And like Rocket Lab, like they so genuinely earnestly want to be in this space, you know, like they really just like, I just want to do planetary stuff with NASA, man. It's like, I just really want to do that, you know, like
big pick me energy of Rocket Lab.
And they just, yeah. And they just can't quite break in, you know, like they have like the escapade thing, but it's like, they're not getting any of the flagship stuff. They wanted to be Mars sample return. They want to do it all. And they're just not quite getting it yet. And I kind of wish they had. I think that would have been cool, but that's my take.
I felt like, yeah, well, I mean, on one hand, I wonder, do you think there's a Tory Bruno angle to this? That would, is this the first thing that, would Blue Origin have won this if not for Tory Bruno leading that government relations program or whatever he's on now that is also, what's his role called? He's like in charge of Blue Ring, I think.
Is he? I thought he was, right? I thought he was all like the lobby wing.
National Security Unit, which includes Blue Ring.
Oh.
So
the National Security Unit owns Blue Ring?
Well, I mean, that's how these are described in these releases. Mm. I don't know how...
That's interesting.
He's president of Blue National Security. That's what his LinkedIn says.
Yeah.
Actually, it just says, president of Blue National Security.
I wouldn't have
But then, like, the
that
articles written say, like... all right, there's like the Jeff Faust thing, right? Tory Bruno, former chief executive of United Launch Alliance, said he decided to join Blue Origin to work on important national security projects, including applications of the company's Blue Ring spacecraft. So I'd maybe debatable, we'll get confirmation somewhere in one of our chats that he is or is not directly in charge of Blue Ring, but he certainly has been tweeting a lot of photos about Blue Ring. And I am surprised given that Rocket Lab's been working on hardware related to a lot of like the capstone stuff, and they've got escapade. They all of their things that intersect with NASA planetary science feels more in the lane that this would be. The heritage pick, it feels like. Very, you know, they've got all their solar panels that are on a million things. They've got stuff that is now branded Rocket Lab that feels especially pertinent here.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they've just been nibbling around the edges of that space, and I thought this is the one they were going to break in on it. But
I almost wonder if the lobbying hurt them, because they seem to be doing a lot behind the scenes to, number one, get this program to exist at all as a carve out from. Because remember, the original construction of this was only companies that bid for Mars sample return could bid for this thing. And it had to be companies that included this thing in their Mars sample return bid. So that further, that might be why SpaceX didn't bid, right? Did they? Maybe, I wonder, did they have a relay thing?
Maybe couldn't.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah.
I don't know. Weird. How do you feel about the program generally, though? Like, what is it going to relay communications for at this point?
Yeah, that's a whole other really tragic part of it, right? Because it's like, I guess this is just like the dedicated uplink for the freaking stupid helicopters. I guess that's what it's for, right? Like, I mean, the rovers are still operating, right? But you don't build the infrastructure just to like handle the old assets you already have, right? This should be like a forward looking. We're putting a highway in here because we want a lot of people to drive on it, right? So I don't know what it's for. That's, we needed this 10 years ago, you know, and not today, but or we need to like put the Mars
new stuff in the pipeline
together, right? Yeah. You know, get it humming again because it's not doing much right now.
That's another question I have is that, do you think NASA is going to avoid talking this up a lot? Because then if they talk, like if they had a press conference about this, all we would ask about is Mars sample return and Mars missions and none of that's happening right now. And they don't want to talk about it.
But then like, why do it then? Right. Like,
right.
If you're that afraid of the question, then why is the RFP even proceeding? Right. Like
for their helicopters, they care about the helicopters. All they want to talk about is helicopters.
Yeah.
I bet the only time that this Mars telecommunications orbiter or network or whatever comes out of Jared Isaacman's mouth is when he's talking about Skyfall and says, and now we got Blue Origin working on the relay satellite. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
They seem to want to avoid talking about Mars sample return. He'll mention it now and then in tweets. Some people might maybe ask about it, but they just. It's, I don't know. That's what we're talking about, Dr. Z. Like, is this just. We're just not going to talk about it for a couple of years and then try again later?
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know, as a forcing mechanism, like we love a sunk cost. Like, shit, man, Blue Ring's on its way to Mars. What are we going to give it? It needs a job.
Yeah. And maybe it's a, if you build it, they will come situation too, right? Where it's like, you just got to get that up there. And like, this is a signal. It's like, this is coming. And now we have, you know, so maybe that helps some of the new, any bids going forward now can say, we're optimized to use the new thing that's coming. And, you know, we're not going to be afraid of uplink because there's so much space on this, you know, so much capacity on this orbiter they're building. So we get to do these cool new things. And maybe, I don't know, and we'll see. Hopefully that's what happens, right? But I don't have a ton of faith in like new starts right now for a planetary. Like, I just don't feel like we're going to see a lot of that for the next, you know, couple of years. So,
I mean, I think it'll be a fun mission to watch though for seeing how it goes. Like, how does the hardware perform? How do they actually handle the services angle of this? How does it integrate to NASA's operations generally?
And it will be clutch. Like to be clear, the existing uplink satellites that like Perseverance and Curiosity are using today, they're old.
Yeah.
Like Mars Odyssey is still doing a lot of work that's 25 years old. And then Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is what, 20 years old, I think, something like that. Like they're well past expiry date. So like those could go, like that could happen tomorrow that one of those just fails, and it would not be a surprise. It would not be tragic. Like it'd be bad, but like it'd be like, well, like it lived a good life, you know, like it's totally expected for those to go away soon. And so every time that happens, it's going to get worse. Like I bet you they're already feeling the loss of Maven because Maven did some uplink work too, right? And so it will serve a good purpose for existing assets. It's just, I wouldn't build it only for that.
I have a feeling that this is going to be the LRO of the Mars program, where it was conceived and launched in the last era of missions at that planetary body. And then it flies for a long time, almost solo. And then at the near end of its life, it's like super relevant again. And all of a sudden we're like doing a Mars sample return mission, and like SpaceX is deploying the data centers at Mars. And like, there's this burst of activity at the end of its lifespan. Cause it's supposed to, they said like decade or more, right? For the lifespan of this thing. So it feels like LRO of Mars.
Could be.
Shout out LRO. Yeah. Still taking great picks.
And also like, I don't know what the technical requirements specs look like, but I would presume that they're going to plan some kind of interoperability with these things. And so like, if they send another one afterwards, they'll be able to like talk to each other and like, you know, build up. Hopefully that's part of it too. And so this is like a proving ground where then as we enter a future where we need a bunch more uplink, we can just scale, like, you know, just do horizontal scaling on these things and we're good to go, right?
I mean, it's a great demo for Blue Ring too, because it's if Blue Ring is shaped like, you know, an S adapter payload that might have flown in other vehicles, it's cool to, like, one of the first missions out the box to be like, no, it's a long-lived actual spacecraft, not just carrying payloads places, but like doing a real work, doing real jobs.
Yeah.
That's a great thing. I mean, this would probably be what, like, the, they want to launch this in 2 years. I don't think this is the first Blue Ring that we see launch, but it might be the second.
What else do we know that they're flying on that?
I don't know. We should have done homework. Let's pull it up.
Maybe a national security payload.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it was space domain awareness stuff they've signed. I mean, the Pathfinder was launched on the first flight, but I don't think that counts in the way that we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, DoD stuff, I guess, right?
Yeah.
All right. MTN, you're less mad about it than I thought you were.
Yeah, I don't get SpaceX angle, but that's it. Yeah.
Scratch it off the list, Jake. I'm moving through our lightning round.
All right, sounds good.
Stokespace raised $1 billion.
Yikes.
They are into relativity levels of funding.
Yeah,
we're
relativity
north of
money,
$2 billion.
Yeah. Every time a rocket company earns $1 billion now, we just call that relativity earning. Hopefully that doesn't become a bad word.
Well, and they alongside
oh,
of
shit.
It announced
they just got their relativity earned. They're done for.
And look at the that's so funny. Yeah, they've hit their Ellis number. And they announced this and announced this this vehicle, Jake, Block mm-hmm. 2, Nova Block 2. Would you look at this? Did you look at these drawings at all?
A little bit. Yeah. It's very it's pretty Falcony. Yeah.
Except for the, you know, the reusable second stage thing.
Their signature tech, right?
Andromeda Block 2. Did you expect this yet? Because I expected it at some point, but...
I'm not that surprised by it, because I feel like... I mean, rocket development is just so... like, such a long lead time, right? And... If you ever see a future where you wanted to have a big rocket, and you have to, because the small rocket is not a business, right? The big rocket's probably not a business, as we've seen. We've discussed a lot recently, right? The small rocket, definitely not a business. And so, like, you have to get cracking on that. And, like, well, and think of what was the SpaceX timeline. Like, I'm pretty sure Elon was, like, all hopped up on Falcon 9 and Falcon Heavy, like, before, like sitting in some control room in Quaj being like, is this thing going to work? He's like, well, listen, we got to get on to the bigger one. You know, like, he was ready to go
pretty fast.
Falcon 5,
man. There was a Falcon 5 in there in the mix.
There was a Falcon 5 that it wasn't that in Berger's book too, like, where they had to get him out of there because he wouldn't shut up about the next rocket. And they were like, we need to launch this one first, right? So, like, I don't know. I'm not that surprised by it. And if they got all that money coming, then that's, like, the assurance you need to announce it and start working on it, right?
Yeah. I think I was trying to remember this beforehand. Maybe I should throw some robots at this challenge to figure out, because now they're calling original Nova Pathfinder. Number one, they hadn't been calling it that, right? It was just Nova. It was not Nova
just
Pathfinder.
Nova. No.
I don't love that. I don't love taking the thing that you stood behind so firmly for all these years as this is it. This is the and then being like, oh, it's the Pathfinder. I don't love that. That makes me not have good feelings about the announcement.
No, you think they're. You think that's, like, not a natural progression? You think something is
no, it's
there or
incredibly
up?
Natural. That's the thing I don't like, is that it's like like, oh, that thing. The thing we've been talking up for so many years and saying this is going to change everything, and this is the creme de la creme with our integrated heat shield aerospike engine thing that makes second stage recovery plus. Oh, no, that's the Pathfinder. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, that feels like you're just moving the ball on us and not, like... Could Nova... I mean, like, that was... This was a cool... Payload, tiny, right? 3 tons, reusable, like, not big. But this was a cool looking, weird looking thing. Like, this is this is a fun looking vehicle. Now it looks like every other launch vehicle. But you don't feel weird about the downscoping of.
I think it's just a name. I don't know. Like, what do you call it? Nova One or Pathfinder? Like, the outcome's the same. Like, they're not.
Yeah, but this feels like Terran One to me, man. Like. Oh shit, it didn't work out. Like, we're gonna move on and act like that part never happened. That's the thing that I don't like.
Yeah, a little bit. That's Falcon 1 too, though, right?
But they didn't even launch this one yet. That's the thing, too. Yeah. Right? If this happened after the second or third launch, then it would really feel like
that. I'll give you that. You should at least find some paths with your Pathfinder.
Yeah. But it's also funny too, because every launch company announces the new thing and they say, we have this new version, and they sketch out a future in which both might fly in tandem. Sometimes you use this one, and sometimes you use that one. And then, like, a month later, everyone's like, no, obviously we're just going to retire that one immediately and go on to the new thing. So,
Yep.
I don't know. I was trying to remember if the payload was always this tiny on Nova, though. Was it always 3 tons?
It sounds right to me.
Well, now this site even says 2.5. So. I guess it was, right? Yeah. I'm thinking of Neutron at like 8 or whatever they've been talking up. I don't know.
I know it was bigger than the so-called, like, the, you know, the gang of 1-ton launchers that was around for a while. That was Terran 1 and the ABL 1 and Astra, right?
Firefly.
That was
all
like the 1-ton. Yeah.
Alpha.
That gang that dispersed, you know.
Boy, did they.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't get me wrong. I'm excited that they're going to have a bigger one, because that's more fun. That feels like what we actually need to exist. But I don't like acting like the first one that you announced we're all hot about was never meant to be a real thing. I'm like, no. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm not too bothered by it.
I just feel weird. They talk up, oh, well, now we figured out cylindrical tanks, right? We had this breakthrough. We've been working on this for years, is what Andy Laps said in one of the press releases or interviews or something like this. Has been in works for a while. We have a unique solution to the cylindrical tank problem, so we don't have to taper the top like we did with original Nova. And part of me wants to be like, well, if you figured that out, like, did you just figure that out? Or did you figure that out when you started working on this? If so, why have we continued to work on both things for this long? I can't quite make that connection.
Yeah, I don't know. There's probably just like the manufacturing and testing process was useful, right? So like if the Pathfinder has like a significant amount of like copy paste these parts over here and you're good to go, right? And so you've used that product, right? Like it's served a purpose in teaching you all the things you need to learn and developing some of the core technologies and testing them and then, you know, figuring out the problems and iterating, like, you know, it did work, right? Didn't fly, but it worked.
I mean, none of it's going to fly. They still are going to fly this. They haven't fully turned one to this yet, but
sure.
All of this stuff on screen, like none of that's coming over. These are all the weird little conical thing.
But even like the little engines inside of it or even just the general theory of the, like,
because
this new one's still going to have that like active propulsion heat shield thing, right?
I think.
I don't know what you call it.
I can't really tell with this drawing. That's, yeah, I guess so, right?
Yeah.
So they just figured out something with the flow of this that like they can do this very typical second stage, but with this crazy little bottom integrated heat shield thing?
Yeah, something like that, right?
All right. Cool. I'm in. I want Stoke to be the thing, man. I do. I truly do. I just, part of this announcement hits me weird.
Huh.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
That's capitalism, baby.
Like this is a cool looking thing. This integrated heat shield thing.
Yeah, it's cool.
All right. Well, we've talked about heat shields enough on this show in the last little bit of time. Moving on. We've entered the Europe section of our show, Jake.
Europe?
ISAR Aerospace.
ISAR.
ISAR. I was told by a man who lives near the ISAR that it's ISAR.
ESAR. Okay.
I'm trying successful to get launch. To the video of them making orbit.
The video of the most beautiful launch site in the world.
You're not kidding, man. I'm struggling at pulling this link up, though. Hold on.
Do you think that people in Japan are mad about that because they used to have the prettiest launch site in the world?
You tell us, people in Japan. Are you mad about it? I mean, ESAR, they were in one of the off nominees, right? For their...
Yeah, the explosion.
First attempt when that slammed back into the water.
Came down the water and they had that just incredible drone footage. Yeah, it was stunning, right?
I'm impressed that they made orbit on this this launch here. Everyone's doing it a lot quicker these days. A lot of new launch vehicles are getting up and at it. Love that.
Getting better at it. Getting better at it.
Don't love a night launch for something so spectacular like this, but you know.
Yeah, they don't have the excuse of timing their launch so that they have the moon during prime time, right? They can't do it like the way Artemis
did. True. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, still great video footage here.
Yeah.
Now what, Jake?
Lovely.
They caught the bus.
What payload size does this one have?
I think this is in the what were you calling it? The
1-ton gang?
Oh, I just blasted my ears out. The audio came on at the same time. ESAR Spectrum payload. 1-ton gang. It was 1-ton, right? I'm pretty sure. Let's see. Survey says 1 metric ton to low Earth orbit. 700 to sun synchronous orbit. So yeah, is it dead on? Dead on in the gang.
So how long before they announce that this is their Pathfinder?
That's the question.
Spectrum 2, what's coming here, right?
I love that. Have they already? No, I don't think so. I think they just have Spectrum. Yeah. Good on ya. Let's see how long you can keep it going. No, they've got a different thing going, though. They got the Europe situation rocking, right?
They have Europe, so it is slightly different, yeah.
The ESA Launcher Challenge, baby. Everybody's all up in it, right? Everyone's getting... I do love the ESA announcements of this, though.
They're not only in the 1-ton gang, they're in the only rocket launcher in Europe, commercial rocket launcher in Europe gang, right? So they just entered a new club that they invented, so that's good for them. RFA guys are going to come after me now, but...
Yeah, of course they are.
Oh, what's there was the Spanish one, too. The Spanish guys that made orbit.
Yeah, I'm pulling up this. Rocket? The Miura 5. Like, and Maya Space.
Yeah.
I think PLD Space, the second guy here, is the Spanish one.
Right. Okay.
Right? Isn't that it? PLD Space? They're Spanish, right?
Spectrum Block 2. I said Block 2 right there.
Well, you get to a Block 2. Well, I don't know. What's Block 2? What's it say on here? Spectrum Launcher. It didn't say anything about Block in here. Maybe they just meant the second one. I don't know. This program cracks me up, though. This is the most ESA program of all time, right? Where they're announcing all these, this launcher challenge where, like, they're trying to get initial launch capacity, and then you look at the funding, and it's like, Germany sent funding to the Germans, and France sent their funding to the French team, and Spain to the Spanish team, and it's like, all right, cool. We're all just paying ourselves here.
Yeah, that's very ESA. That is very European.
We love new rockets, so that's good. All right. Lightning round. The exploration company raised $500 million relevant to our conversation about what's going to happen to human spaceflight.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. That's an amount of money that you need to develop actual spacecraft.
That's a lot of money. That's not nothing. Yeah, it's not relativity money, but it's halfway
there. It's not an LS number. different, though, right? Because... Yeah, that's actually a great point. Dig into why that feels different, because it doesn't feel like launch companies should raise that much money before their first launch. Just generally, I think people get nervous, but then you know that like spacecraft going to the ISS need that amount of money before they launch their first spacecraft. It's like totally inverse.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. It's
largest ever Series C by a European space company. That is a Jake superlative right there, baby.
Largest ever, Series C specifically, by a company that is a space company that is in Europe.
And they gave you that figure in U.S. dollars.
Yeah. Who run the world? Yeah. So, yeah.
Jeez. That is weird. Why did they do that?
You guys are the currency of the world. I mean, for better or for worse, right?
Oh, I'm here for that. I'm actually intrigued by the fact that they're reporting it in U.S. dollar figures.
It's a good way to compare it to other companies, right?
Yeah. Although that looks bigger when you do it not in U.S. dollars. So, then you can just, people are like, I guess that seems like an absolute ton of money because you have no comparison.
Because euros would be smaller,
it would be less, but nobody knows, Jake, what they're looking at. So they just assume. That's what I'm saying. So they just look at it and you're like, I have no comparison. That must be a lot of money. I don't have anything to compare it to. So. I think, I don't know, I'm still, this is a, the human spaceflight storyline here, especially, did we talk about Isaacman's Twitter thread in response to Phil McAllister? Was that on the show last week or did we talk about it?
We did that on the pre-show.
Yeah, it was a pre-show thing?
Yeah.
You know, Isaacman's out there tweeting about Starliner having a life past the ISS. Everybody's freaking out about Dragon not having a life past the ISS. We're entering a logjam time period where, like, it's 2026. We can't be doing this. We got to figure out what we're doing if we're doing any of this, you know?
Yeah.
In and the exploration company is the only one raising this amount of money. Well, that's true. Yeah. Well, it's, okay, so you're one of those people? Do you think
ISS is coming down imminently?
Do you think it's flying until 2040? What year would you think the ISS is coming down?
I think it's going to be up there in 2040 wrapped in duct tape. I swear to God, like it's going to be.
You think so? You really think so?
They'll just like close off that one module and, you know.
Might be a couple by then.
I don't know, but I can see that happening because it's just the coordinated effort to like wind it down and replace it. It's like just, it's a big, big job. And like, the ISS only came to be in the like confluence of some like pretty big geopolitical events. And I feel like you need that again to engender the next one. I don't know. So the only way I can really see it like ending is if like someone figures out a way to like not, like some politician figures out a way for to end it without it being their fault. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of like they'll do some action that makes it so that canceling it is the only option, you know, and then, but you do it like 4 years later so that the next guy is the one that actually has to do it, you know, like
but by that something point, it's like too that. Late. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the only way I can think of it happening, but I don't think you're going to have any viable alternatives anytime soon. And so it's just going to make sense. Like, well, we're just going to squeak out on our, you know, 1-2 year piecemeal at a time until whatever is ready. Cause everything, even if you do have a good plan, it's always late. So like you can't just be like, well, 2030, we got these guys are going to be flying. These guys are gonna be flying. Starliner's ready to go. Like, where's that? It's 2030. Right,
this time we'll hit this timeline. Yeah.
Yeah. This time we'll make it 4 years out in the future. That's like no man's land, you know? Like, so I don't know. I don't think it's coming down in 2030. I'll tell you that much. So
hypothetically, a good way to cancel the ISS program without it being your fault is to take no action when there's a clear and present danger to the ability to fly to the ISS. And you know that it takes longer than the ISS will last without being up there.
That's fair.
I think we might be seeing that right now.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With it and do that by way of the company that maintains the great way to fly to the ISS has no interest really in flying to the ISS with that vehicle anymore. And you know that the people that run the ISS wouldn't trust the other vehicle to fly to the ISS anytime soon. So
the only thing I keep thinking about is like the whole Russia situation still wasn't enough to kill it, you know?
Yeah.
Like the other major partner on the ISS invaded our allies and like is like public enemy number one on the world stage right now. Like they are just like unequivocally the bad guys right now. And we're just like, well, let's just keep going up there and shaking hands. And, you know, like that wasn't enough. Like, what else does Putin have to do for us to be like, we can't
blow
continue
up the,
our partnership?
Get the Soyuz production line blown up, you know? Like,
well, you know what I mean? Like what else has to happen? Like, the timeline of, like, bad shit that can happen via Russia is, like, that's unbelievable. So, I don't know.
This is making me realize that everyone's been trying to figure out why does Boeing still want to do the Starliner program, and I'm left with the only reason is that it's the only way the ISS program will continue on, and they think that will make money because that they're the prime there.
It could be, yeah.
Which I also kind of love that storyline, where it's like, you want the ISS to keep going? Make a spaceship that works to get there. Like, that's on you.
Starliner becomes their ISS becomes their Starlink. They don't want to fly.
It's more like their gateway. It's like their gateway. We got to do it. We built this thing. But seriously, they get the prime contractor gig is a couple billion a year, right? They maintain the ISS. Now, it's not, I don't know.
Easy money.
But I don't know how much of a moneymaker it is. Like,
it's a service, it's a contract. I think it's probably pretty fruitful.
It's got a little bit of a, yeah. So if you were to, that's actually good math to do though. So take the charges that they've spent on Starliner and look at that as like their ISS investment fund. Like, yeah. Would that deposit be worth the payoff of ISS flying to 2040?
I think it would. I thought Starliner economics made sense without that. So,
well, here we are.
Yeah.
So imagine you get the Starliner money from flying these missions plus the ISS going longer. That's got to be the bet. And so the most helpful thing SpaceX can do to Boeing is not fly Dragon anymore. And the second they realize that, maybe they'll keep flying Dragon.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, Dragon's been canceled before, so I'm not holding my breath on that one either. So.
Ouch. All right. You got nothing on the space summit. You weren't tracking the storyline. Bunch of U.S. companies were going to go to Paris for a space summit and some state dinners, I assume, and then were told by the White House to not go because they were worried about making policy commitments or something. Jeff Faust went anyway, as expected. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Typical rabble-rousing that you're used to at this point as a Canadian.
Yeah, it just washes over me now.
Yeah, bummer for, you know, K2 and StarCloud, who doesn't get to go have good dinners in Paris or whatever. But
yeah, it does suck. Yeah, but the policy thing does kind of make sense to me, though. Like, I don't necessarily agree with it, but it's thematically in line with this administration, right? And that kind of stuff has bitten the United States before in different ways, you know. But
I don't know. It felt like one of those defensive calls of like, well, we don't know what it is, so no.
Yeah, you could know? Be. Could be. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm kind of thinking like the whole planetary protection thing, right? It's like another example of that, where it's like, by showing up to this meeting and participating in this thing, now they're like beholden to all these extra rules and stuff, right? That maybe they don't actually want to do. And yeah.
I think there was like some spectrum ruling concerns. So
yeah, could be. Yeah. Yeah, because that meeting is probably a lot more important in the grand scheme of things than planetary protection, right? It's going to be like much more current, topical, spectrum or, you know, space domain and things like that, right?
And there's been those policy documents coming out from Europe that none of the U.S. companies were happy about the way they were writing that. So,
which ones?
I forget what the policy documents were called, but they were like floating these new European space policy frameworks or something. I don't remember the storyline. It's like tickling my brain a little bit. I'll report back on the next show about this. It was definitely a thing. What is that? What is it? What was it? What was the name for it? European Space Policy Documents, spacenews.com, because they were covering it. Anyone in the chat, throw me a lifeline.
Yeah, it's not ringing the bell.
European Space Act, the EU Space Act. Is that what it was? Is that the one I'm thinking of? I think so. I don't know. People were really mad about this.
I'm scrolling back trying to find stuff too. I don't.
someone will give us a report that cared about this greatly. But I remember this being a hot drama for a little bit. So. All right. Do you want to hear my ridiculous Isaacman theory?
I think so.
What everyone came for.
I think it's time.
Okay. Yeah. Jared Isaacman is out there doing his thing, getting all the press, instituting NASA flyovers at NFL football games this weekend. Sub theory, Jared Isaacman is flying a plane over the Eagles game on Sunday. That's my bet that I'm placing. I should put it in Discord. Go Birds. Out there, you know, being a guy who has a reputation, he's going on TV a lot. And do you remember when he was ousted, when he was in that year, the year of wandering that he did?
The lost year. Yeah.
The lost year of Isaacman's life and NASA's Isaacman life. there were talks of, hey, he's going to go into politics, right? That was kind of rumored a little bit. People were talking about it a bit. Some people said, yeah, he was seriously considering this. My theory, and I think you were there with me, that like the only way he got back into this position was just because he's a political shark, that he played like politics to a T to get back into where he was. I think the TLDR is, I think he's going to run for Senate in PA. I believe this is going to happen. John Fetterman is up for re-election in the, not this midterm that's happening right now, but like the next one.
In 28.
If you've been following politics in the U.S., you will know that John Fetterman is very disliked by his party at the moment, and Republicans
didn't he just
like
show
him
up at the Republican convention
last night. Yeah. Yes. People think he might switch parties. He said he wasn't gonna in the summer. Maybe he runs as independent, yada, yada. I have a dumb theory that Isaacman is still going to go run for Senate, which would entail leaving NASA pretty soon. Like, we looked up when Fetterman was running. He announced what will be, you know, February coming up on the calendar is when John Fetterman entered the race last time he won. Now, that was that Senate cycle in PA was hotly contested. We had Dr. Oz was running the whole thing. The other senator in Pennsylvania, McCormick, was running it then at the time, too. It was a weird time in Pennsylvania. So I have this the Fetterman situation right now makes me confused as to what this timeline will be, because I think that's beneficial to Isaacman running for Senate, because he can't really declare and know what he's going up against until Fetterman makes a call on what he's going to do. Is he going to switch parties and run as a Republican? Is he going to stay as a Democrat and try to win the election? Is he going to run as an independent or something? I think that has to be answered first before anyone else really is going to get in the race in any of the lanes, right? So I don't think it changes my opinion that Isaacman is going to bow out of NASA and go run for Senate, because once again, I believe Jared Isaacman is an absolute political animal, and many Republican senators should be happy that he got the nomination at NASA, because clearly he's good at politics. What we have seen in the last year is he's really fucking good at politics. why would he leave NASA, Jake, some might ask, right at the time of all of the things happening, right? He's been talking up Artemis 3. He's been very specific. Artemis 3 is flying on a very particular timeline, mid-2027. We're going to stick to it. We're going to fly a mission that exists. We're going to do the thing, but we're flying in mid-2027. I'm accelerating the timeline to fly in mid-2027. All right, let's do that. Let's play that he flies something in mid-2027 as the head of NASA, and then gets to bow out, having reshaped NASA policy for the next couple of years by canceling the Gateway and getting political support to go and do that, by reframing the Artemis program, reshaping it, but then gets to leave and not be there for any of the delays that we all think are coming. Like, the stuff that's going to get delayed the most would happen right after he left. And he still gets the credit for, I put all these things in momentum. All this momentum was built up by the decisions I made in that, look how much I got done in a year and a half at NASA.
That sounds like a politician move, Anthony.
He's really freaking good at politics. Like, yes. Now, he's gonna greatly enrage like everybody in this, because the nerds already, some nerds already have a touch and go relationship here with the Isaacman, right? Like, he's had to do things, yes, to get in this position. We've heard that for other cabinet positions, right? Everybody had to admit to Trump himself that he won the 2020 election or whatever. And I would pay someone I would up when I was trying to pay NASA $200 to FOIA the pictures of tomatoes. I would pay more money than that to find out how exactly he worded that admission. If in this nomination capacity, yeah, I think he had the
fealty pledge. That. Yeah,
yeah. So he's going to have to do political things. He's got a really good reputation right now for the people he would need to vote for him. He's going up against a guy that, if Fetterman did switch parties, though, also has a good reputation for the people that need to. So it would be a weird race. It would be a very strange race. But
yeah,
I don't know. Like, if he were to enter office in that way, how interesting would that be to, like, have him in the Senate with the takes that he's been rolling out? Would he do these long form Twitter posts still? Would he be out there? I don't know. It'd be weird.
Do you think he'd be? I'm like imagining him like in a future, like let's say he runs and he wins and then he wins again and he becomes like a, you know, a long-term kind of senator, and then he climbed up the ladder a little bit, and then he's on the CJS subcommittee, and then he's on the space, you know, and he's like writing the budget for these things. That's
the path I would think he would want. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause how like, if you look at what he's doing at NASA and you like what he's doing at NASA, which people's political opinions aside, I think many people like what he's doing at NASA. And would quibble over certain parts, but in the whole, feel like we're making good progress through a human space flight. You know, he's cleared out log jams that we've been bitching about for years. So that's good. If you're in that position and you're like, what other thing could I do to push my interests along? It would be to go be the, you know, the millennial version of Richard Shelby.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the next.
He's also young enough. Like, if you want to be really cynical about it, he's young enough that he could like run and win, and then write a bunch of like really favorable policy, and then leave politics, go back to his company, and take advantage of it. You know?
Yeah, that's true too.
you could go the full circle for a young guy like him, right?
Yeah. Or be president. You know.
Or be president.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd be president. I'm not feeling that one as much.
Man, if you think that, like, he obviously has a political bone in his body. He does. I think if you think NASA administrator is the top position he wants, I would be shocked.
No. I still think that he is the secret successor plan for SpaceX. I think that's what it is. Elon's not going to be around forever.
That's a good fallback plan, I guess, if you're not president. You're saying his two options are run the country or run the largest company? Like, all right, cool.
He'd be well suited to run SpaceX, like, admittedly, right? So,
maybe. I don't know. Some of his recent takes have actually have been interesting in that regard. Like, you know, that Twitter thread I was talking about, where he's talking about what commercial was good and not good at. And like, he's not as much as a SpaceX homer as I think people obviously thought in his nomination hearings. Now, how much of that is who's the real Jared, right? Our age old question of NASA administrators. Yeah.
But still, like, those takes are like, they were good takes. This recent Twitter thread, we've been citing it.
We'll link it.
But they were good takes, but they were in the perspective of a NASA administrator, and that made them like, I think if suddenly became the new CEO of SpaceX, like, those takes are still not wrong, but it doesn't mean he's going to like change what he would do at SpaceX. Right. Like, you take the money, right? Like, if you win the contract, you know, we think this is, of course, right? Like, it's, I don't think those are in conflict is what I'm trying to say.
Tell me though, but, Jake, that him visiting the Blue Origin launch pad the day after the explosion doesn't look like dude visiting place that just got hit by hurricane.
Bill Nelson, walking around, they're like, oh wow.
Does that not look like every governor or president you've seen visit a natural disaster zone?
Yeah.
Like, if you are like, all Jared Isaacman will ever be is the head of NASA, and obviously the next president that wins, no matter what party, will keep him on because he's doing so good. I would just like to warn you that he seems very good at politics and very interested in politics. And if you're that kind of person and you're a high achiever like Jared Isaacman already is, you just want to be the guy. You want to go be the guy. So whether it's Fetterman's seat or not, depending on how the political winds blow, I think I think there's a Congressman Isaacman in our future.
Yeah. So the only thing with the president part that I don't quite gel with is that he's such a hands-on guy that I feel like he might be the kind of person that the president role would be frustrating, because you don't have the time to be hands-on on anything when you're the president. Like, you have to delegate every last thing. All you can be is just vision, right? And like an authority. Like, you have to just decide. That's all you ever need to do is decide. You don't ever get to go, like, to go and visit the hurricane site, that's a production. And when the president does that, like, that's a big, big deal, right? And it's like that he doesn't really have time to do that. He maybe shouldn't, you know? Like, and so there's like the opportunity cost of spending an afternoon walking around a hurricane launch site is so high. Not to say that it's like not empathetic to do so. That's why they do it, obviously. But, and I feel like, so I just feel like Isaacman would be much more. From what I know, I don't know him, but from what I see him, I feel like he'd be happier the further down the local chain you get, where he gets to, like, you know, be in there with the
town council, Isaacman.
Maybe not that small, but like senator is good for that sense. Cause like, you still gotta, like, if you want, you can make the senator job about the senator job. A lot of them will grandstand and look for national profile because they're looking to move up. But like, if you want to just be like a senator where you just get in there in the weeds and make the sausage, you can. Right. And so I feel like that would be very suited for him, because he'd be able to have that good vision and get his hands dirty and make the real things and make a real difference, pass some goddamn legislation, which your legislative branch needs to figure out how to do again.
Nah, we don't do that.
I don't know. That's my theory there. But
I would love, one of the things that I love about the storyline, though, if he does go and run for office and win, is that Sean Duffy was getting a lot of flack during the time he was running NASA, that he only wanted to have that role because he wanted to increase his national profile to go on to bigger and better things in the future.
Yeah,
Jared Isaacman was the one that really cared about NASA. And I would love if it was like, yes, and. Yes, and watch how many TV hits I do and how many flyovers and weird, like, national events I do. And see you back here. I'll announce an event in Florida in November that I'll do annually in November in Florida. Let's go, baby. Like, okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good theory. And the nice thing is we don't have to wait that long to find out if it's true.
No. So my main prediction is it's Artemis 3. He's pushing for it to fly. Mid-2027 would be late getting into the race, but maybe that race needs that time to develop. And that it would pan out well. So
do you have to, like, I know it's common, but do you have to step down from NASA administrator to run? Can you do it?
I don't
know.
It's a great point. It's a great point. I don't know. It's a great point. I mean, I don't think there's rules.
Yeah. Sometimes there's rules. Sometimes.
I don't know if there's rules, Jake. It's not a lot of rules these days.
Don't always follow them, but sometimes there are rules.
You can. I think he said you could just do things. So yeah, I think he. It's a great point. I don't know, because I mean, nobody would expect him to stay on at NASA beyond November 27 anyway, right? 27. What year is that? 28. Yeah, November 28. Like, that's when he's done being the NASA administrator right now.
January 29, yeah.
Well, but I mean, you know, you take the holidays off.
You're a lame duck administrator in the short time there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if he becomes a congressman, which if he's a senator, is he administrator senator? Or what order does he go in? I'll have to call Bill to find out.
You know what's really weird is that, like, this is the first guy that I could actually see, like, continuing on through, like, a Democratic administration. Like, he would obviously fit. I just think the circumstances are so weird around it that it's less likely. But, like, this would have been one of those times where, like, we could have had a 10-year, 12-year administrator again, you know?
We say, like, that a lot, like, but, like, he's in politics, you know?
Yeah.
Which is funny, because the reason he wasn't NASA administrator for that extra year was because he used to also donate to Democrats. So, like, that's another aspect. How he would be as senator, I think, would also be, like, would he be Joe Manchin-like and kind of annoy everybody and be extra powerful in the middle? Like,
yeah.
PA is kind of a weird state for that. He's not going to run in New Jersey, I'll tell you that. So he's going to stick to his new state lines. Yeah. Yeah, Bridenstine staying was another thing. People were saying in the chat, that was a thing. But then he had a falling out at the end, so who knows.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yep. Well, are you endorsing this theory or not endorsing this theory?
I endorse this theory. Yeah, I think that's pretty plausible. I don't know if it's probable, but it's definitely plausible. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen.
All right. That's so politician-y of you. All right. Let's see if my thing works, Jake. Do you see my screen in the back? My thing's in the back. Gone. I don't know. I haven't tested this integration in a while. Did it do the guest board? Nope. It's all blank. It didn't work. We promise we have things booked, but this apparently does not read the webpage. Oh, man. What are we doing next week, Jake?
Next week, we are going to go back to our new favorite topic, which is reentry vehicles. We have Nick from Varda coming on, so we're going to talk more about that CTO. Interesting new business line. Yeah.
CTO of Varda, right?
CTO of Varda, yeah.
So we'll get technical. That'd be great.
We're going to get real technical. We're going to find out once and for all whether heat shields work.
Yeah. Let's do more heat shield content. More all heat shield
pile. Yeah, TPS content. So,
yeah. Do you think Varda's held back by the lack of a national center to test these things? Yeah. It's coming your way. Hey, nice Beanbo bread shirt.
You like that?
OG Union sponsor up here in Philadelphia. So, look at that.
Largest bakery in the United States.
Good fact. All right. We're out of here. Bye, everybody.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. End of test.